Hi, hello, and welcome. This is the Zonecast, where we interview emerging professionals, entrepreneurs, and academics. And today we have with us on the show Philip Barra. He is the founder and CEO of Mocha AI. Hi, Philip. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Hey, Salman. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me. I'm doing quite well. How about yourself?
I'm good as well, and I'm definitely excited about this particular episode and talking to you and learning about your story. Can you share your professional and personal background?
Yeah, absolutely. So Philip Barra, the founder and CEO of Mocha.ai, previously known as Milo and BankMe. We've gone through two rebrands in the last 6 years of building the company. But ultimately, Mocha is a fintech platform that allows our users to achieve their financial goals. We do it in a very simple and easy way where we link directly to your existing credit and debit cards, round up your purchases to the nearest dollar, take the spare change and put it into a fully managed investment account. This allows our users to start saving effortlessly with no investment knowledge necessary and start retrieving those different financial goals that they may have. And we do it directly from a mobile platform. So really excited to be talking to you about that. This is my third entrepreneurial venture. So I started my first entrepreneurial venture directly out of university. I quickly learned the difference between self-employment and building a business. I built a really awesome product, but the total addressable market was a little bit smaller than anticipated with a long sales cycle. So I moved on to my second business, which I grew to about 250 restaurants and 25,000 users doing restaurant discounts and essentially peak shaving for filling restaurant capacity during off-peak hours, and then had a quick exit within about 6 months there before starting Mocha. So really excited to talk to you a little bit about my background, why I'm an entrepreneur, and some of the things that are go into building a fantastic business here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So can you talk more about Mocha? When was the company founded? And if you can also explain how the product works, is this some kind of app that people can download? And if you can talk about the features and benefits.
Absolutely. So I'm originally from the US and I moved back here. I moved to Canada back in 2008 to go to Concordia University. And after I graduated, before going and taking any type of official job, I actually just jumped right in and started my first venture. And I was a bootstrapped entrepreneur. So while being a bootstrapped entrepreneur, every dollar I had went into my businesses. I had to become really good with personal finance management in order to be able to live the life, a quality of life and standard of living that my friends were having, but at a fraction of the budget. So became really good with personal finance management. I also had the help of using all of the US fintech products that were inaccessible to my Canadian peer groups because I was had access to the US App Store and I was a US citizen. So I was able to access a lot of those great features. And eventually, when I sold my second business, I said, you know, there are a lot of great things about being a bootstrapped entrepreneur that, you know, can scale and help people like my friends, my family, my peer group. I said, I wanted to build the best fintech platform out there to help essentially our users achieve their financial goals. So how do you build a platform that doesn't require any type of knowledge, that doesn't require any complicated steps, minimum deposits, anything that they needed, but empowers them to live a better life. So I like to say that our social mission is at the core of everything that we do within Mocha. And it's really founded on this idea of financial inclusion, building more affordable, more accessible financial products for a country that didn't have access to a lot of great fintech innovations, and especially not back in 2015 when I started the company. So that was the basis of really why I wanted to start Mocha. And from there, we started with a mobile app that was easy to help you start saving, investing. That was the number one goal that people had in order to get started. And then find and identify different opportunities to contribute more money and save more money in your everyday life. So we have an app today that you can download from the Google Play or Apple App Store all across Canada, within France, and a couple other European countries coming soon. And essentially allows people to save and invest effortlessly and define the goals that they're trying to achieve and then discover more money in their everyday life through various features that we have overall. And it's all offered for a flat, simple $3 a month fee, with no other hidden fees or charges there. So it's one of the most successful products here in Canada.
So you said it's like $3 a month?
Yep, it's $3 a month with unlimited investing. You get a fully managed portfolio manager managing your account. You have access to essentially unlimited investing for that flat fee. So it's really a great deal for people to get started. We tried to take a different approach to our structure. When we're thinking about pricing transparency, saliency is really important, making sure people understood the price, but also making something that was accessible, right? So having a fixed fee model was something that's quite interesting for Canadians and something that's quite different in fintech that we were happy to kind of pave the way with.
So people can download this app, and if they want to invest, they can transfer some money, and then there will be an investment or advisor or wealth manager on your side who will be investing that money. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's actually really cool how it works. So when you download the app, it takes about 3 minutes to set up your account. There's no confusing information. We don't even require a SIN number, but you go through and you answer things like your name, your address, your employment information. You answer a couple very simple and easy to understand risk profile questions, things like if the market was to go down, would you buy more stock? Would you sell stock? Would you do nothing? And then once you have your account set up, you define a goal. So some of our users are saving for a down payment on a house. Some are saving for retirement. Some are saving for travel post-COVID, or just a rainy day fund and putting money aside. But you define a goal or multiple goals on the platform. And then what we do is every time you make a purchase using your existing credit or debit card, so this could be your RBC debit card, it could be your Tangerine credit card, Moka rounds that purchase up to the nearest dollar. So coffee made for $3.25, we'd round that up to $4. We'd take that 75 cents and put it into your investment account managed by us every single week. You could also put in recurring deposits. So put in an extra $20 every single week, or you can put in a one-time deposit. You know, you got a bonus at work for $1,000. You can put that in as a one-time deposit as well. So it's a fully robust wealth management platform, but really focused on an easy interface to allow people to identify their goals and contribute towards their goals. And it happens automatically when you save and you spend your money. So we help you save when you spend.
So that's interesting. Like, so if somebody were to buy a coffee portion, you would do the math. A portion of that amount will be automatically put in the investment account of that person, so they can actually, every time they spend, a portion of that goes towards investing. Is that accurate?
That's absolutely accurate. And what we wanted to be able to do with that was just say, hey, you know, most people, when it comes to saving and investing their money, they don't feel like they have enough money. They don't know where to start, or they do want to start, but it's at the bottom of their priority list. And, you know, they push it off for another day, and another day never comes. So by linking a very simple behavior that people do every single day, spending money on groceries, on the different items that, you know, you may have, Moka can round up those purchases and we can get you started. So just by linking to an existing behavior, without any net new behaviors, it's a great way for people to start putting money aside. And that's the thing our users will love the most about our product and service. And then it grows with you over a period of time. So we have that enhanced functionality if you ever want to do more as well.
And if they don't want to do, let's say, per transaction, per purchase, they can do like a one-time deposit, or they can do like regular deposits. And the idea is, you know, to, I guess there might be a lot of a psychological barrier that people have to investing. It's like they don't know how to go about doing it, and as you mentioned, they might be like pushing it off later, and then that never happens. Like I myself recently got into investing,
Nice.
and I am starting small, not big. The idea is you to familiarize myself with the whole process, you know, to understand how to navigate. But yeah, hopefully I definitely plan to do more investing down the line. But I guess the idea is, as you said, link it to existing behaviors and encourage people to invest So that's definitely a neat idea. So
And Salman,
since
that's exactly the thing that we're trying to do. You talked about getting started. You talked about putting away a little bit of money first, starting to understand the process, and then growing into that larger behavior over a period of time. And I can't stress how important it is to get started, right? So just what you essentially did on your own was what we put a product experience around and helping people do organically and through a guided process. So for us, that's the thing that has unlocked a lot of our success. Is people want to have that same experience that you've gone through recently, and they've turned to Mocha to be able to help them make that a reality.
And the pricing model for that you have produced is also unique. Like you're not doing like a portion. You know what I'm saying? Like if you invest this amount, like for example, like wealth management companies might charge like a portion of your investment volume or something. You have kept a low fixed regular price, which I guess many people can afford. It's not a scary price, it's not a huge price, but it's also a recurring price. So you have like a small consistent revenue stream. So that also I guess is interesting, is a small affordable price which doesn't scare people away from investing or using the app. So that's also interesting. So since inception, how many users have you acquired? What kind of traction have you had?
Absolutely. We've acquired hundreds of thousands of users in the Canadian market and most recently launched over in Europe. We've been able to do so with some great unit economics. So our cost to acquire is fairly competitive. We target a 1 year payback period on our customers. We've been able to have a lot of innovation on the operational side of the business to be able to keep our operating costs extremely low. So that's part of our secret sauce is being able to offer our services for such a low price because we've been able to create a structure that's focused on high volume and low per unit cost. So that's been quite successful for us as well. And yeah, that's what led us to be the leading saving investing platform in the Canadian market, and for us to expand internationally.
So what was your customer acquisition strategy? How did you promote the app? Did you try Facebook ads, or did you use any particular websites to promote the app, or was it word of mouth? How did you manage to attract that many users? Did you have like a particular strategy?
Yeah, so if you think about cost to acquire, a cost to acquire is typically measured by the total cost it took to be able to bring on one activated and monetized user on the platform. And when you think about what it takes, especially in a regulated business, to be able to get to that end cost to acquire portion, there's a large funnel, right? So it starts with awareness at the top of the funnel, and then you work through the funnel to get people to that monetize and state where they're getting value from the product and they're using the product and they're an actual user. So the first thing that I did was focus on that product experience to create that funnel that was as smooth as possible. So it started with a very strong value proposition with a lot of customer discovery to make sure that we're building a product that customers want. And essentially, we went in with the hypothesis and we thought we knew what a user would want first, but we went through many rounds of talking to our users, talking to potential customers, and understanding what would it take to be able to solve their problems. And then we went down to the product experience and we said, okay, what would it take to actually get that funnel to way? So one of the big innovations was no social insurance number required for signing up for the application, making the signup process as easy as possible. So if you're standing in line at Starbucks, you could download the app while you're standing in line. And by the time you buy that Starbucks coffee, you're already rounding up your purchase. So doing those parts made our funnel very effective, which ultimately lowered our cost to acquire. So once we had our product value down, what we did is we looked at how do we fill the top of the funnel. with awareness, making sure that we're getting as much visibility as possible. So performance marketing and the Facebook ads that you were talking about, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, any of these types of performance platforms, including Apple Search and Google Ads, led to a significant, call it about half of our total acquisition. So that works really well in order to be able to drive a certain level of scale and bring on and seed our initial user base to be able to get the awareness that we needed to. From there, we had a strong content strategy. This idea of earned media would be something that we've been quite good at. So going out and having great visibility with awesome platforms like Zonecast that we're currently on, but also how do we get magazine, TV, and blog and media mentions, newspaper mentions, it has driven a lot of awareness for us as well. And that's always helped us manage that part. And then we have our own content strategy where we're managing our own magazine, our digital magazine, to be able to get the right level of awareness. And that's driving SEO, that's driving organic inbound, people searching for the platform. And then I'd say our one of the most important parts has to come from our referral platform. So we have a double-sided incentive program where we incentivize our users to invite their friends, and their friends get $5, and they get $5 to be able to come on board and open up an account with us. So it's a double-sided win-win-win type of situation. And our referral traffic has generated as much as 25% of our overall volume of our user base coming in. So having a diversified channel blend, doing paid media, doing partnerships with different brands, doing press and media outreach, as well as having a strong incentive for our users to invite their friends or family, has worked really well for us to get the success that we've had today.
Mm-hmm. So through referrals, 25% of the customers or revenue is generated. Can you clarify that?
Yeah, so it depends on any given month. When, you know, the month that we did Dragon's Den, for example, a lot of our traffic was categorized as organic traffic, but that was because someone saw us on TV and came in through that. So those months, our referral was smaller than that. But you look at some of our larger months, and we have referral campaigns where you invite 10 friends and get $1,000 and portions like that. And yeah, up those months, referral would account for easily 25% of our overall traffic.
So you mentioned Dragon's Den. Which season did you participate in, and have you has that episode been broadcasted?
It absolutely has. It was very early days for us in the business. I believe it was season 12. It's available on Netflix if you go take a look at it. Okay. I have to be honest with you. I've only watched it twice. I've watched it once. We had a big airing party with all of our investors and family and friends at our office. And I watched it once then, and it was pretty cringeworthy. Also watched it myself. It's very difficult to see myself on TV. But that being said, it was such an incredible experience. I met a bunch of great investors through the Dragon's Den platform. They asked some of the most sophisticated questions that any investors have ever asked us. And I've pitched quite a few investors in the past 6 years here. And it was absolutely an incredible experience for us overall. So it's one of our most successful advertising clips because we licensed that content directly from CBC. And people really got to know us through that Dragon's Den episode. It happened right at the launch of our business. So the business has come a long way since that episode has aired, but it's still one of our best content pieces that we've had to date.
Did you receive any offers, and did you sign any deals with any of the dragons?
So that's funny. It's if you watch the episode, you'll see that I was actually had a couple offers through that, but only at the end of the episode. But when it actually happened in real life, we had an offer almost immediately. So the way that we were able to actually structure the offer and how it happened through the process was actually very different than how it was portrayed on the episode. But happy to say we got an offer from three of the dragons, and we took their offer on TV, but later on in diligence, we decided to actually bring on Desjardins Capital, which is North America's largest credit union, to lead our seed round of investment. So we ultimately ended up going with an investor that was more aligned with some of our strategic initiatives, although I would have loved to continue the relationship with the Dragons, and we still touch base from time to time today still.
Well, that's great that you had some success from the episode offers, traffic, and also later on a deal with the Chardins. So that's great. So recently, your venture was in the news regarding an acquisition. So can you talk more about this acquisition? Who's the acquirer, and how it all it's still, I guess, ongoing, but how it all started.
Absolutely. So I'm happy to announce and happy that we have announced Mogo's intent to acquire 100% of Moka shares in an all share transaction. Essentially, what that means is Mogo will be bringing on the Moka team to come together to build one of the best fintech products in this country and globally. So Mogo is a Canadian-based public fintech platform based in Vancouver. They have an amazing suite of products, everything from their Bitcoin cashback spend card with carbon offsetting to their credit monitoring and credit protect products to their mortgage solutions that they have overall. And we found that our products were quite complementary. We had a wealth product and wealth offering. We have some strong subscription revenues with our Moka 360 solution, and we have a good, strong international foothold. So when you bring both companies together, we create one of the strongest and most comprehensive product offerings available. And during the announcement, we actually talked about the fact that we'll be co-creating a new free stock trading platform together, which we're quite excited to be bringing to the market as well. So for me, the Mogo transaction is going to be a great one for the future of both Moka users as well as the fintech community in general. It's an opportunity for us to have access to more resources, more capitalization, and a fantastic product set with a complementary team that we're going to come together and build something really special. And it's just a way for us to accelerate even faster with the same social mission and the same objectives that we had before.
So Mogo will be acquiring 100% of Moka AI. If you can confirm that, and how did the conversation start? Was Mogo the first to initiate this conversation about an acquisition?
Well, the interesting thing about the Canadian fintech ecosystem, and I think you can see this around the world, is that the fintech founders are actually quite close. It's one of these situations where all tides lift all boats. So we've been in communication with all of the Canadian fintechs for quite some time. And it was a conversation that happened quite organically. And we were just talking about what the next steps for both of us were. They had just raised a large amount of capital. We had just announced our Moka 360 product, and we're having a lot of great traction on that solution. And it happened organically, where we're just saying, it just makes sense for us to come together and build this thing. So that's how it came about.
That's pretty interesting. So right now the whole acquisition is not complete yet, but once it's complete, Mogo will own all of Moka, and then you will be working with them as an employee to manage this business.
Yeah, so when that transaction finalizes, pending the appropriate regulatory approvals, and there's a high likelihood that the transaction will finalize based off of the interpretation of our binding LOI that's been published publicly. The Mocha team will be joining forces with the Mogo team in order to be able to build this product. I'll be joining as the third C-suite executive over on the Mogo team as Chief Innovation Officer, joining the two fellow brothers and founders there to help build this. So I see this as a strengthening of a partnership and coming in together. While technically I'll still be employed by both Mocha and Mogo, this is really an opportunity for us to come together and build something quite special together. So yeah, really, really excited about this new chapter and new opportunity. I'll be stepping down from the founder and CEO title and taking on that Chief Innovation Officer title, which is one that I'm quite excited to spread my wings and see what I can do.
And previously, you've also acquired one or two companies. So, can you talk about those acquisitions and what was the approach behind that?
Yeah, the first one is actually a quite special one for me. We actually ended up acquiring an existing portfolio management company that had hundreds of millions of dollars under management, as well as generating significant revenues. And essentially, it was a way for me to bring my partner into the business, Liam Chung, and we did that in an all-equity deal. There's no way that we would have been able to afford the valuation of their company, but Liam fell in love with our social mission, fell in love with how we're trying to democratize finance and build a product that would service millions of people around the world, and that was something he wanted to be part of. So Liam came on board through this acquisition, became executive chairman, had a seat on the board, but also an operator within the business. And together, him and I built the foundation of Mocha for what it is here today. I think Mocha would be anywhere near where it is if Liam hadn't joined and built this together. And so Liam will also be continuing on with Mogo, joining Mogo's board, pending appropriate appointments, and be moving and continuing to play an active role in that business. The other acquisition that we did was a Dutch asset management firm based in the Netherlands that allowed us to have the regulatory licenses, approval, and team that we needed to be able to expand our product from the Canadian market to the European market. As you can imagine, operating a fintech is quite cumbersome in terms of the requirements that you have from a regulatory point of view. And facilitating that acquisition allowed us to bring on the right team to help us facilitate and know the landscape and make sure our product was successful in that market. So that was the second acquisition that we did as well.
So both of those acquisitions were successful for you? I mean,
Absolutely. I would say they were a huge
profitable over
success.
time.
Profitable is an interesting word, and yes, they were profitable, but more so, they allowed us to reduce our operating expense and vertically integrate the riskiest parts of our business. So when you think about if we hadn't acquired those companies, we would either be working with partnerships with different service providers or vendors, or we would have had to go through a long and costly process to be able to obtain the knowledge, the expertise, the technology in order to be able to operate those businesses. So from my point of view, these were extremely successful because now we have less overall partner and supplier risk and controlling the parts that we need to be able to deliver a fantastic customer experience. So from that perspective, absolutely, they were extremely successful for us.
So what is the key for if you're evaluating an acquisition, a merger or an acquisition opportunity, what are the things to look for to determine if this is something worth pursuing? Is there any specific criteria, or do you go based on like intuition? How do you decide if you should pursue a potential acquisition opportunity?
That's a fantastic question and one that I haven't taken much time to prep for before this call, but off the top of my off my cuff, I would have to say understanding both parties' incentives and what are you trying to achieve is the most important part. So understanding, you know, is there a certain risk you're trying to eliminate, an objective you're trying to achieve. So in our case, either accelerating revenue, decreasing or obtaining new licenses, or decreasing risk of suppliers taking advantage of us in a certain way, were all things that we were concerned with when evaluating these opportunities. And then it's the art of deal making. So understanding the other party and what are their motives, incentives to be able to do a deal with you, and how do you, and the way that we've structured our deals is how do we make sure that both parties have continued upside and having a successful outcome. So in the two acquisitions that we've done and the acquisition that we're going through right now being acquired, all have resulted in, if the business continues to be successful, we're all successful together. So I think that's the way that we've best managed this acquisition process.
Now, if you look at the landscape for investment apps, there might be many apps out there. So do you feel like this is a very competitive landscape, and are you able to differentiate yourself from other service providers?
Yeah, it's interesting. There are a lot of great companies working to innovate in the financial industry, but there are none in Canada that can offer a range of services as comprehensive as what Mogo and Moka will be able to have as a joint offering. That said, I'm really inspired by what I see in the fintech ecosystem, both locally and abroad. And when it comes down to it, we're all doing this for the consumer, right? We all know that in the fintech or financial services industry, there have been less than ideal customer experiences and ultimately challenges that people have had through legacy systems and processes. So for us to be able to come in, it's really all tides lift all boats. So while there is a lot of great competition and a lot of great services being offered, the aggregate of all of it is still not strong enough to be able to really take on the incumbent infrastructure. And that's why I think joining forces and encouraging fintechs and building a fantastic ecosystem that encourages people to work with either us or a competitor would be seen as a win, regardless of the outcome, because ultimately it creates the best customer experience out there.
So recently, many businesses were affected by the challenging economic time that we are going through. Did you experience any growth or decline in your business in the last year?
Yeah, it's a really interesting point you bring up, and I think it comes down to the situations that we each individually have to go through during this challenging period. And everyone's gone through a hard time across the board, but we've gone through hard times in different ways. So acknowledging that this hasn't been easy for anyone, certain when it comes to your finances, certain segments have had times of excess, of which they're looking at investing, they're looking at deploying their capital in ways that they may not have. And there's a boom of new investment accounts that are being opened. There is a lot of financial literacy engagement that's been going on. You can see it on TikTok. There's a huge FinTok community that's out there, which has been quite encouraging to be able to see. But on the flip side, there's a segment of people that are, you know, in time of need, where they may have gone through employment or pay cuts and been in difficult financial situations, have incurred additional financial expenses that were unexpected and unplanned for. So Moka has really been able to help out our existing customer base with emergency funds that they may not have had access to otherwise. So that's been really rewarding and fulfilling for us to be able to see the impact that our product could have overall. But just to conclude on what we've been able to do for our customers that are facing that, we've actually introduced a few different products through our Moka 360 solution that have really helped out our customer base. The first being access to a financial planner. So our users can have access to a certified financial planner to be able to coach them through money facing challenges, like how do I apply for the CERB? What type of different government grants are available? Should I buy versus leasing a car? Everything's available on demand, text message based financial advice based off your financial profile that we have through our company. The second is our debt management piece that allows you to visualize all your debt in one spot, create a repayment plan, and automate your debt payments to help you save on interest. So that's been a very powerful one. And lastly, we introduced a debt, a bill negotiation tool that actually calls service providers on your behalf and helps negotiate you the best deal with a set of tactics that we have to be able to secure a great amount of savings. And our customers are saving hundreds of dollars off of cell phone, internet, electricity, and other utilities that they may have by using this bill negotiation platform. So I have to say the business has worked out well for Mocha during this time period, opening up new accounts for people who are interested in getting started saving and investing. We've also been able to help a lot of people, either existing Mocha customers with emergency funds or new Mocha customers and existing Mocha customers with access to bill negotiation, debt management, and financial coaches.
That's great. Can you share a fun fact about yourself?
Fun fact about myself. Ooh, it's tough. So I'm a huge business geek and fintech geek. So we do a bi-weekly all hands with the entire team where I actually give a fintech insight. So I'll go and geek out about a certain fintech and I share different, relevant, interesting things about what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong, why I think this is interesting, why I think they'll be successful or not in the market. So that's been something we've been doing for a few years now that our team quite likes. On a personal basis, I love to dirt bike, and it's one of the sports that I do that helps me clear my headspace and really get aligned where I need to. So I love to hit the trails, hit the mud, and take my dirt bike out whenever I can.
I think there should be one hobby that everyone should have, which involves interacting with nature and clearing your mind and completely disconnecting with, you know, routine. And I think dirt biking is a good example of that, where, you know, you just go out and you're in the moment and you're enjoying. So that's great that you have something like that, because you need something to a place where you can just go and be yourself and not worry about your regular business and work stuff. So I think this is a great adventurous hobby that you have. How long have you been doing it?
Oh, I've been doing it since I was like 8 or 9. It's been a long time. I don't race anymore. I used to race, but it's been quite a while. But I completely agree with you. My partner and I love to take our dog out on hikes, go out camping, really spend time out in the water. We completely agree that it's important to disconnect and spend time out in nature and really enjoy and appreciate. It's also important to have a well-rounded lifestyle, so make sure that you're spending enough time with family and friends and taking care of your own personal health, as well as your professional life is extremely important.
Yeah. Have you won any races?
Have I won any races? Yeah. I've won some races with friends, and I've enjoyed when I've done some official races, and that was back in high school. I definitely enjoyed doing those races. So I wouldn't say I was in the top three, but I was always competitive. So I've always I've always enjoyed going out there and giving it my best shot.
All right, perfect. Well, Philip, it has been very nice speaking with you and learning about your background, your story, and your entrepreneurship journey. It's definitely quite extensive and elaborate, and you're doing something interesting and innovative in the fintech and investment ecosystem. So thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. And for all the listeners out there, if you're interested in rounding up and investing your purchases, definitely check out Moka, MOKA.AI. And if you're interested in 1% Bitcoin cashback cards and all of the great things that we'll be doing together with Mogo, you can check out Mogo, M-O-G-O as well. So looking forward to building great products for all of you. And Salman, thank you again for having me on the show.
You're welcome. Listeners, I hope you enjoyed this episode and you get a chance to learn from Philip and his amazing entrepreneurship story and the great product that he has to help you invest. And as you mentioned, you can definitely visit the website and learn more. And thank you so much for listening to Zonecast, and stay tuned for more episodes.